5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Hey, what's up, friends? Welcome back for another week of our podcast. This is the Let's Dig In podcast with Rich Rosendale and our co-host Christopher Ryloff and Rachel Barnett. This week, we had a very talented, very creative, good friend and chef, Brad Kilgore. Brad was the James Beard 2018 Best Chef of the South finalist. He was also Food & Wine's Best New Chef 2016. He has several restaurants in the Miami metro, really made his name and big impact with his restaurant, Altar. Well, as you know, 2020 has wreaked havoc on the restaurant industry. So we caught up with Brad and wanted to hear what his thoughts were for the future, how he and his team have pivoted and dealt with the crisis of 2020. It was a great conversation. I hope you'll enjoy. So without further ado, let's dig in with Chef Brad Kilgore. Brad, we launched this this whole podcast concept. One of the reasons we just wanted to be able to still stay in touch with people and see what people were doing. And as you know, over the years, we've been very much into teaching, but I feel like even getting involved in that stuff, we kind of learned in the process. And talking to people like you and a lot of the other chefs and personalities we've talked with, we are as much wanting to share with our audience what you're up to. I mean, you're a major influencer in our industry. People are going to be looking to people like you as far as how you're going to navigate through, let's face it, 2020. And really just see kind of like what's going through your mind. Let us know, like, what are you doing right now? Like, what's kind of a snapshot of your company?
You know, clearly everybody's just in a tailspin of this year. And you can take it on the chin, but it's how you get back up, right? And it's how you really, you got to humble yourself into, I mean, look at it. There's no Beard Awards. You know, we're trying to get Michelin to come to Miami, and that's, you know, even though that was a long stretch, it's like even probably longer now. And now what do you do? You know, it's not always all about accolades, clearly. But that was something to look forward to and work and gear your team towards and get inspired by. Now it's, you know, think about the community, and that can be from your menu, from your team. And also like how you're offering and what you're putting out there. So for us, you know, from this thing, from the beginning, it was like, what can we do to with what we have and make an impact? And so at the beginning, when everything closed down, I took Altar with 12 course tasting menu to, we turned it into a barbecue, and we were delivering toilet paper to people's houses. You know, that's
wow.
A big 180 degree turnaround. And when I started it, if you look at clearly as a business owner, it wasn't for the business. It was we let go over 100 people between all the restaurants. And
wow.
It was about putting people back to work. And what I did was approach the team. I said, listen, you might be corporate chef, you might be general manager, but everyone's across the board making the same hours and same pay per hour, and splitting the tips evenly across the board. And it doesn't matter, because this is about everyone getting a paycheck. And in Florida, we have the unemployment issues that I think are very well known. Even if you did get your unemployment, the maximum without the federal assistance is $250 a week, which is laughable. Clearly no one's paying rent in Miami with that, let alone putting food on the table. So we went from, you know, zero to, we got up to 24 employees back on. And they were making, you know, some of them were making as much as they were making before. And then we started working with the World Central Kitchen. That was helping us. We were doing anywhere 1,000, 1,500 meals a week. And then we worked with Food Rescue US in Miami, also doing the same meals. And some of the scary part about that is, as much as of an impact we were able to make at that time, I'm not for sure if people in need, if that time is over yet. And
right.
If there's more to come with that. So furthermore, what I did with a few friends of ours, we started a Miami Restaurant Employee Relief Fund. What we wanted to do is we wanted $250 grants to anybody that had lost their job, no matter what position you were in. And, you know, we were thinking we'd get $10,000 or $15,000. We actually got $113,000 raised in about 8 weeks' time. And I would say the majority of those donors were industry people. You know, even if it was $5 at a time, it was people associated with the industry. Because we all know that we support each other. I mean, you know, even just like we're on this podcast right now, you know. And we were able to distribute those $250 grants. You know, that can be an electric payment for the month or a car payment or, you know, it really, I think, helped impact a lot of people. And that was, you know, it seems like a lifetime ago. That was 3 months ago, 4 months ago, right?
Yeah, that was a pretty, I mean, that was a pretty dark, like, rough time. I mean, I feel like at least now we're starting to talk about a recovery and everything like that, but we still don't know if we're even going to, if we're even through the worst of it. But yeah, that, that first couple of months was just, man, it was a lot to swallow for everybody.
And you know, it was 1500 cases a day and down here we got up to 15,000 and then people had to kind of hit the start button on life again, because it's just so much time you have to survive, honestly.
So, Brad, with the World Central Kitchen, like what was the, structure with that? I mean, were those meals that were going to families, were they workers, or like how exactly? Ours, I mean, obviously a huge organization.
Great question. Ours with World Central was focused around the hospitals and the frontline workers. I know probably other restaurants and different aspects of it did it to different frontline workers. Ours were hospital focused. So we would make basically as fulfilling of a meal as we could, heavy, as in like we would fill the package up as much as we possibly could, making like curry ragus and over a starch couscous, pasta, something that, you know, these guys are working 12 hours a day. If they get time to stop, you know, they may get 10 minutes to eat. We wanted to be able to fulfill them with some energy. And it was great. We worked with, you know, a lot of our purveyors that provided us with, you know, quality product for affordable, because that our goal was to do volume and help as many people as possible. The Alter Q and World Central Kitchen thing lasted about 8 weeks, and then what you saw around the city is, because this is obviously my perspective, was from Miami, very hospitality industry focused, restaurant, hotel, what have you. Everybody lost their job. It started off as restaurant, and then it just tumbled into every industry, right? You know, was turning over. And then you saw your sales down 20%, next week down 20%, down. Well, there's only 5 weeks before you're 0%. You're losing 20 a week, and called, you know, buddies around town. Everybody's feeling the same thing. And so instead of calling it fully quits, we took what we had left and we put on 3 more days. We ended up getting a little funny. I think we did for about 7 days, every other day, where we just opened it up to any and everybody line up. We did between 200 and 300 people. We did meals for two. We got some drinks, different things that were donated, filled the bag up, lined up, and just fed the people. And then we closed the doors.
So, I mean, I think that all the stuff that you've done, a lot of people don't really know that. And I think that's, that really says a lot about you and your company and your team to be able to put programs like that and contribute and participate. So I think that's impressive.
And it's all my team. You know, I don't take anything. They wanted to do it. They wanted to be a part of it. And they understood that how important it was. And they're just incredible people, honestly.
Well, and I definitely feel like through this whole pandemic that there's been a lot of camaraderie, like people just trying to figure out, especially within our industry, because, you know, people are, I mean, it's not like one business or one aspect or like one city has been hit. I mean, this is something that is global. I mean, it's, we were doing podcasts with people in other countries and we're like, wow, this is like, this is everywhere. This is like hit everybody everywhere.
Right.
It's, so,
Go ahead.
Well, one of the things is I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it is kind of crazy how media has been shifting very much to like voice. People are listening to a lot more podcasts. There's, you know, people doing shows from their from their houses and living rooms and kitchens and all that stuff. I mean, this whole thing has accelerated, I think, the economy and just culture and everything, like, very rapidly. But I was listening to a podcast the other day that you were on with a good friend of ours, Charles Carroll, which I listened to most of it. I wasn't all the way through it. But one of the things that I was impressed with was your keen understanding of business and understanding a lot of the numbers. I don't think that a lot of chefs always think about that, but you clearly know your numbers and the rent and what all these things should be. As we're getting ready to go into the next 6 months or next year, are you starting, I mean, you have four restaurants. Are you looking at, like, are you reconsidering, like, do I want to change my model, or do I want to do a new model, or do I want to, I mean, you've obviously had very successful with all the things you've done, but, you know, the next 6 months, I mean, the world is different. I mean, are you thinking right. about those kinds of things?
Absolutely. You can use one of the words of the year and say pivot, right? Luckily, I think a lot of us, part of what we do is creative, right? So I think all of us here right now are known for our creativity in one way or another. And it's extremely important right now to be creative. And also, you got to be able to think about the entire picture. Like, I'll put it in perspective, a long time ago, somebody, oh, Alter's tasting menu only now, you know, that's great. You can do whatever you want on the menu. And even more so, this is my response. I said, well, you would think that, but you got to put a dish on the menu that's functional in a location in the kitchen that they can execute continuously, that is good enough for the customer to tell their friends to come back to the restaurant so the dishwasher can put food on his table, right? You can't just do anything you want. And now I would say it's even tenfold. Everything right. has to be thought through, not just how cheap can I get my chicken, or what can I substitute that ingredient for? It's the entire vibe, the safety, the communication, the guest experience, the employee experience, their safety, the entire process of, okay, I need to put people in the kitchen, but I don't want them rubbing shoulders as much as possible, or, you know, everyone has to have their time respected. You know, if people have, life is going to be a little bit more precedent, I think. Family is going to be more precedent. We've all been slaves to our jobs, and we've all, you know, been to the part where I don't get my teeth checked. I mean, I don't know when the last time I went to the dentist was, you know, because we're dedicated to work, and it's work, 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 work. And I think we're going to have to be respectful of our environment and other humans in general, whether it be staff or guests or customers, if you will. And that all being said, you got to take that into your concepts. So, you know, I can go one by one. I have Brava, which is in the Adrian Arsh Performing Arts Center. It's performing arts art. It's a large gathering space. The reality of when that's going to come back online is, you know, maybe late 2021, I think, and that's with right. a little fingers crossed. And that was a building that housed thousands of employees. Alter, tasting menu, focus. Do I think it's smart to come out the bat right now in this climate with a tasting menu only restaurant? No, absolutely not. I don't think that's smart. Ember. This Ember is our wood fire American bistro that's where I'm at now. This one speaks to a little bit more to the masses, as in we do fried chicken, we do a burger, we do steaks, mashed potatoes. But at the same time, I'm not going to put A5 on my menu right now. I'm probably not even going to put Wagyu.
Right.
And the menu I wrote, I haven't done that. I've lowered my prices. I've thought I'm going to do a salad where you can add a chicken or a fish or a steak to it, where my chefy head before, I would never have done that. You know, our fried chicken, I'm going to offer it light meat, dark meat, just to make people comfortable, you know, separate it. And then also I'm going to do a gluten-free mushroom, fried mushroom, chicken fried mushrooms. So I'm trying to figure out a way to be more welcoming when people are a little bit uncomfortable to go out. We're expanding out in our plaza area. We're trying to think of ways to different times in their day. Why would they come here, right? So before it was all about dinner, cool experience, you know, maybe sit at the chef counter. So now it's like, okay, well, let's build a lounge. Let's bring my wife's ice cream shop, Mad Lab Creamery, and let's highlight her creations, and maybe we put a little booze on top and make these boozy sundaes. And it's not all like, oh, let's try to get $80 check average per person. I don't care. Maybe they come in and they just enjoy themselves and they spend $15 on a sundae and some water, you know? So, we're trying to think about people in our environment. And then Kaido is a Japanese cocktail lounge and restaurant. Cool, sexy, dark, has a speakeasy in the back, lots of Japanese whiskey. But we have a curfew now, you know, it's 10 p.m. right now. Fingers crossed it goes to 11. But tell you what, in Miami, people don't go out until midnight or 1 in the morning.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the night goes long down here, so this is the whole flip on the other side. How long is that going to last? Is that going to change the culture? Right now, restaurants are getting 1.5 to 2 turns because of the curfew. How do you provide for your staff? You got to think of everything's kind of an equation. And then what we did with Kaido, we found these guys, Greg Kettner and his girlfriend Jackie, who were making pizzas out of their house. And they made 10 a day, and because you couldn't get them, they went viral. And I got one for my birthday. It was the best birthday cake. And I, you know, I was like, you guys look like you need a home. And I've got a few kitchens. And so right now they're sold out a month ahead. We make 90 pizzas a day. We're sold out a month ahead. It went viral and it sells out.
I saw those pizzas look amazing. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. It's not a month. It's more than a month because we tried to order them. And I think that they are, last week when we ordered it, it was already half. I didn't know, it was until like the end of September or like starting October, and they were like done. I was talking to Ruben, and I text you last week whenever we were at the Ocean Reef, and I said to Rich, like, we're not getting them.
I've been waiting a month for my own. I'm not lying. I'm not lying. My wife's like, why? We need a pizza. I'm like, we can't click as fast as these guys. I don't know. So, but I mean, I think that's a beautiful story in its own. And that would be a heavy pivot for me too, right? To kind of think outside of the box and partner up with these guys and kudos to them. And we've built a team around them, and you know, they hadn't operated a restaurant, and he's an up and coming young chef. And, you know, we put that team behind him. We built the recipes, you know, for the rest of the menu around his like spectacular slow fermented dough. He gets the flour milled to order, 3 different types of flour from Georgia. I mean, just awesome. To get that shit down here in the middle of a pandemic was a whole nother thing. We had to get a mixer, wheeling and dealing, you know?
One thing is, you mentioned about all these changes and stuff like that. And some of the other people that we've had on the podcast, a lot of people have kind of gone through a lot of change, but don't you think that a lot like of the customers though, in general, like a general public in general, people have been more understanding for a lot of these changes than ever before? Cause you know, before it's kind of like, oh, hey, we're going to start charging for bread now. We're going to, you know, people go crush you on Yelp. I mean, you're always going to have those people that are going to be, you know, assholes and not be happy about something. But I do feel like there's been like major changes, like, you know, like, oh, we don't have seating anymore here. I feel like people, they understand. And I think for you, I would think people appreciate a lot of the strides that you've been taking to still trying to kind of keep, you know, there's a bigger picture than just trying to, like you said, like accolades and all this. It's like, trying to keep people working and trying to keep things running, keep things going.
Yeah. Again, kind of a little bit back to it's keeping everyone in mind, but it's before it was, you know, only for the customers, worried about the Yelp reviews, like you said. Now it's like, well, maybe I got to hold my team and ourselves precedence at the equal precedence to the guests, because everyone needs to be safe and comfortable. Because, you know, we have a invisible enemy, if you will, at this point, and there's no way to track it. I do hope and believe that we've seen this death rate plummet, which is excellent. Talk about reporting and this and that and whatnot, but I mean, down ears to the street and ears of people in the hospital, things are better. And I think people are a little bit more comfortable now. I think every day may be a little bit more comfortable. And also society, by following rules, masks on, you know, using different, I have a key on my keys to press buttons. Everyone's just respecting each other a little bit more. And honestly, it's okay with me. I don't want to like rub everyone when I walk down the street anyway, so it's fine with me. But just taking mutual respect, you know, respect in society, I think is something that maybe we are losing a little bit. We're living in this fast-track social media world where everything was kind of like a virtual facade of reality, and I think this makes you bring a little humanity back, hopefully.
It's interesting that, you know, the word comfortable keeps coming up and making the guests feel comfortable. And I was on Instagram last night and I saw a restaurant here in Atlanta where they're doing coursed out menus right now. And that almost made me uncomfortable to see, because it was just, I don't know, it was just, I don't feel like we're ready for that yet. You know what I mean? And it was just odd to see, interesting to see that there are chefs out there who have started doing tasting menus again.
I mean, there's clientele that want it too. I've seen it as well. I think for me, food sharing was like, what, 10, 12 years ago, it became the hottest thing. You know, it wasn't it wasn't normal. Like, I order my appetizer, you order yours, man, you know, and you're on a date, or, you know, here's a bite. But Ember would be the first reopened restaurant, and you know, people, there's a lot of dishes that are naturally shared. We're going to do these little, you know, flatbreads or pizzettes and or steaks, and people want to split it or whatnot. So we're going to be offering as much as we can. I mean, it'll be written on the menu. If there's something you want to split, let us know so we can do it in the back of the house. I know that forever as a line cook, it's like the last thing you want to hear. You're like, you want me to split what? but now it's like, it's part of the offering. And so, and how much time people want to spend in restaurants, but you got to let people make their own decisions too. You can give them respect, and you give yourself and your team respect. But in the end, if people want to be there for 4 hours and hang out, I guess that's their prerogative.
Yeah.
One thing, Brad, I remember whenever we were doing the, I think it was maybe the Roots dinner a couple years ago, and we were talking about brisket or something like that. And you kind of, we like in the midst of like the plate up or whatever, it was like doing one of the courses, started talking about cooking just the points as opposed to the flats and stuff like that. But I mean, those are things that like little details like that, little things that you kind of remember like over the years of like doing these events with everybody. And that's kind of something that I miss too, you know, just like the camaraderie of like all the people that now we look at and we see them, and you feel like you're still kind of like living through them by seeing them on their Instagram page and stuff like that. But it is really kind of crazy where we're like, I don't know, 6 months or so since like anything like that has happened.
Long.
But the reason I brought up that barbecue thing, I mean, do you feel like, is barbecue a cuisine that you feel like you would, that you have an affinity for? I mean, I feel like we've talked about it a few times, like over the years.
I mean, to answer your question, absolutely. Born and raised in Kansas City, I think,
right.
I think it was the first food that I fell in love with, you know. When I think barbecue, the first thoughts go back to being Southwest Boulevard in Kansas City and going to lunch with my dad when he was at work. You know, that's what I think of immediately. Wow. And the epitome of barbecue when I was a kid was a 50-50, which was half ham, half brisket. A lot of Kansas City places slice it razor thin, like deli style, and they put it on white bread, like off-brand Wonder bread.
Right, yeah.
And then you just get like a Welch's grape and whatever. Everyone has their own individual barbecue sauce. My mouth is watering right now.
Yeah.
Talking about that. barbecue.
It's craveable. I mean, barbecue is like craveable food. You know, it's like the way it smells, the way it looks, the way it kind of makes you feel. Pizza's like that too, by the way. A lot of those.
Oh, yeah.
Those cuisines.
I could live off those two food groups forever.
Yeah.
But I will do a barbecue. I had some barbecue aspects to the opening of Ember. I'm going to go a little bit more just wood fire cooking and the elements of the embers and the fire rather than barbecue on this next round. I've had 4 or 5 months to think about this reopening. But I do want to do a full-fledged barbecue concept. I think Miami, some have opened. One in particular is doing quite well out of New York, Hometown Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys are great, and they do a great job. And for me, it's just something that I really want to put out there, and I definitely, I will.
Do you feel like you would use, I mean, obviously you have some incredible training, and just from your more kind of international, thought about flavor profiles and stuff like that, would you kind of try to go more, traditional American, like regional barbecue with like notes of international flavor profiles? Would you try to integrate more any avant-garde techniques? I mean, as you know, we could talk about techniques all day long, and there's, you know, even just smoking is a technique, you know.
Absolutely. And to answer your question, all of that above, but if you look at, like, you call it a regional barbecue, which is the best way to put it. I mean, a lot of those restaurants, their menu is quite simple, 4 or 5 sides, more or less the same bucket of dishes that everyone's pulling out, like cornbread, mac and cheese, beans,
yep.
And then your proteins, and then maybe one sauce, maybe 3 sauces, you know, and honestly, it really doesn't go much further than that. I would look at that as kind of my base, but without a doubt, I would definitely throw some curveballs in there. And when it comes to technique, it doesn't mean you can't. And I remember our conversation about brisket, and I think you did a 48-hour sous vide on this.
Yeah.
That technique to me is about consistency. And
right.
So I don't, like, shove it down the throat, like put the word fluid gel or foam or sous vide this and that on my menus. To me, it's about a consistent technique that I know I'm going to get the same product. And So let's say you're going to do a turkey breast, you know, you brine it, cook it sous vide, and then I would toss it in my rub or spice, and then I would smoke it. You know, you can take that to every level. Brisket sous vide is different than slow smoke, but I'm in the city, and to have a giant barrel smoker outside on my patio where I can have somebody, you know, there 10 hours.
Oh, it's awesome.
Smoking.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an actual, like, opportunity for me, you know, so I probably do a mixture of sous vide smoke to get our consistency. And then when it comes to flavors, I would definitely get creative with it. I just have this thing stuck in my head of doing steak and eggs with a bone-in short rib and, like, super Frenchy, barely cooked, you know, truffle, maybe some parm or Gruyere scrambled eggs on a slow-smoked short rib. I don't know. Just, I can't get this image out of my head. Half the time, you probably have to convince somebody to order it, and they'd be like, oh, crap. Okay. All right. I know what's going on here.
I remember when we had our dinner at Altar, and we had some great dishes. One of the ones that stuck out there that I really enjoyed was, I think it was a short rib dish with mushrooms, but it was, do you braise your short rib?
That was a traditional braise.
That's one of the things that, to me, that I remembered kind of leaving. I remember tasting it. And I was like, wow, that was like, that tasted more braised than sous vide, and it was wonderful. But I feel like that's something for young chefs out there to look at, that just because you have somebody that has a very, you know, high technique and everything like that, that there's also room for these traditional techniques like braise and stuff like that. Not everything has to just go. I mean, and we're obviously over the years been known for doing a lot of sous vide, but, you know, it doesn't, I mean, I'm at Roots, when we go through lots of brisket, and, you know, we did the sous vide for Jamie's event, but we usually just smoke them, you know, low and slow, you know, and, but I all of that stuff.
Something to do with, a lot of people ask me all the time, or automatically assumed that I was sous-viding every protein because we were a modern restaurant. Right. I would say 95 out of 100 dishes I put on the menu were not sous-vide protein. And I think there's something to be said about a perfectly cooked, or at least as close as you can get to perfectly cooked protein. And I, you know, chicken breast, I really like how clean and it comes out sous vide, but the skin sucks, you know, and the skin is such a highlight to a chicken breast. When it came to fish, what I usually did was steam it at anywhere from 59 to 61 on a gentle steam. So it basically just melts apart in your mouth. The other part is, if you're working in a restaurant, you know how much money and time it takes to cryovac individual bags if you're going to do 75, like we're a tasting menu. So if we had 85 reservations, 85 people are going to get that trout. So if I had to pay somebody and buy 50-cent bags to cryovac individually, that's not going to work out. You know, I got to pay this guy to bag fish all day. And then with those short ribs, that I just really like a traditional braise, but I would do it very low and slow. That was 250 degrees, combination steam and roast, for anywhere 7.5 to 8 hours. And then we let it cool in the liquid. Everyone out there listening, if you're a young chef, any confit, any braise, cool it in the liquid for sure. Imagine like a sponge where you squeeze a sponge and it's tight when it's done cooking, and then you let it go slowly. Well, it reabsorbs all that moisture and gentle. And then it was very classic from there. Take the fat off the jus, reduce it until the natural like salinity, you know, was there. Then I would thicken it with some Ultratex and xanthan. And then you put it in a pan, and as my old chef put it in a pan and baste it like a man. That's what he used to scream at us, you know. Mount it with butter and make it look like a candy bar. And that's it.
And now my mouth is watering.
I know. We should have brought some food for this one.
One of those secret ingredients for those glazes is ABC sweet soy. I mean, it clearly puts gluten into your dish, but it gives you that shiny lacquer glaze.
So that's interesting. We also used to use just a touch of glucose. Would give it a little bit of sheen, but I'm going to try that with the soy. I get some of that.
Yeah, and glucose is 1/3 as sweet as traditional granulated sugar, 1/3 less. So, I mean, same idea.
So, Brad, you worked with some really amazing chefs over your career. I mean, would you say, if you had to like say that any of them were like more kind of inspired your technique? I mean, you know, I mean, you work with Grant, but you clearly, I mean, you have a lot of the technique and stuff from working at Alinea, but you know, you've kind of still forged your own style. Is there anybody that has really kind of, you feel like this has been more, a bigger influence in the direction of your philosophy?
That's a good question. You know, coming up, I didn't really latch on to a single chef as like a mentor. I also, you know, I moved pretty quick and I started really young. I was washing dishes at 12 years old, in sixth grade. Winter break is when I started working in restaurants. So by the time I was cooking was literally 15 years old when you're legally allowed to put a knife in your hand or a knife or whatnot. And I dishwash all the way up into there. So I've literally been living 34 now. So that's 22 years experience in restaurants at 34. From there, I tried to work for whoever the best chef was in each city. So born and raised in Kansas City, Selena Teo, I worked for. She won the James Beard Award while I was working for her at the American restaurant, kind of like a American legend restaurant. James Beard actually helped open it back in the day. And then I went to Denver partially for culinary school and also to work, you know, and I was totally into fine dining. And then I saw this, what was coined then as our molecular gastronomy thing. And I just thought it was so cool, right? Like, look at that. It's not, you know, yeah, you can sear a perfect scallop, but then you're going to pair it with all these crazy crisps and chips and airs. And, you know, how do they make that? What is that? So I really did a lot of studying on my own to learn the food science, but It's not food science of like putting alginate and some random orange juice and dropping it into a bath. It was the learning of why. Why does a scallop turn brown? Why does an herb stay green after you blanch it in salt water? And then just take it from there. Why can Marco Pierre White make a terrine with lobster and leeks without gelatin? You know, the carbohydrates that are naturally in the leeks. You know, what to do with sulfur and acids and how those manipulate other proteins. And then I started making things up. And so I just always called it understanding the why. I really got into that in Kansas City, and Grant Achatz was taking over the world. And I got an opportunity to move to Chicago and work there. I just turned 21. He was actually sick at that time. And, you know, youngest, newest guy. And so it was an incredible kitchen. And he persevered. You know, I think everyone knows that trek that he went on through his partner, Nick, to rebuild himself. And incredible, incredible mind and thought process that company has. And from there, Laurent Gras was opening L2O. I was obsessed with Alain Ducasse, and he was like the king of French cooking, and I was obsessed with French cooking. You know, it's like our backbone, right? And when I heard he was opening, because he was basically Ducasse number two, I got an opportunity to go to L2O, and the way he worked, the way he functioned, the way his recipes were written, the precision, and I mean this in the best way, if they made robotic cooks that they let him program with his own brain, he would have done that, because his goal was for all of us to repeat as if he, because he couldn't be on every station every single time.
Right.
He was also a workhorse. He worked the station. He literally bleached and scrubbed the doorways and the floors on his hands and knees every single night to get his brain right. And I observed that a lot, and I really, really appreciated that just precision all the way through. And for me, I saw him write a recipe for a sauce without ever touching the pot, because he knew all the percentages of the percentage of water to protein to aromatics to everything. And it was incredible. The sauce work was world class. And a few years later, 10 years later, I was that author, and I was trying to make a pipeable chocolate curd. So just like a lemon curd, equal amounts lemon juice, eggs, sugar, and butter. That's a traditional lemon curd. I wanted it to be a curd, shiny, flexible, keep its tubular shape, but be able to pipe without collapsing. And because of my years of knowing percentages, I printed out a piece of receipt paper, gave it to the pastry chef with these percentages. We used a Hot Mix Pro, which is like a Thermomix. Set overnight, came back the next day, and I never changed a single gram on that recipe. It worked out. And it's due to just kind of studying, you know, studying, watching, and precision, I guess. He was the biggest influence on the way I operate, for sure.
Well, I definitely think that any of the Ducasse alumni, any of the people that have passed through there. I mean, I know when I was a younger culinary, and that was always like one of the chefs that I always looked to. I mean, I even bought his French encyclopedia, the pastry one, and I bought it when it was in French, and I was like, and it wasn't very good. I mean, I knew I liked the French terms. I was able to kind of hobble Google through it
back then, you know?
Yeah, right, man. Totally. It was like, it was painful. But I mean, he was doing, and that's how I started doing sous vide so early, was like going to Europe. Because in Europe, they were doing sous vide like much earlier than what we were here in the United States, as you know, like pre-internet.
And that's why sous vide a protein, because when this guy's working really as fast as he can, he has to plate, cook, glaze. Well, your fish is going to be a little different every time, but if you're sous vide, it's going to be exactly the same every single time. You're eliminating the human error. And by using these techniques to eliminate human error, you allow them to have a little bit more time to focus on other things like plating and other precisions. And that's really how I approach it. I know you've seen the same. You know, the Europeans, they brought up sous vide. Thank you.
So because you were talking about your team, about like how you like personally, you were like looking to the side and you saw everyone from your team, like people that you had to let go because of the closure. But how you have kept your motivation, like personally and at work?
There's good days and there are bad days, you know. I'll be blatantly honest. I've felt stressed my whole life, as in pushed to stress and kind of feed off of that, you know, and that pressure. But anxiety has been a new thing, you know. That's been a new feeling, and it's really odd. You can't control it. It just shows up, sticks around. It's like sitting on your shoulder. Honestly, it's tough. You know, you got to be realistic. But I think the main thing, to answer your question, and I'm trying to think of how I do it, I just got to be honest with myself. You can't hide it. You got to talk about it. You got to put it out. And you got to the to-do list can be very long, the life to-do list. And if you just let things pile up on it, it's going to be bad. And guess what? It's not going to get any shorter unless you cross things off. And so you got to get up, even if it's tough to get out of bed. Because it is an uphill battle. I think everybody's in an uphill battle right now. Once you start knocking things off that list, you will feel better, and you'll get this weight lifted off your shoulders. And it's easier said than done. I'm not going to act like I'm the best at it or perfect at it. And communication. I think most issues in life come down to communication, period, especially in our industry. But if you have someone you can lean on, a friend, husband, wife, that you can maybe communicate, that can help you at least listen. If they can't give you all the answers, they can at least listen. And like you said, Rich, about how our community has come together a lot, I'm pretty sure there's somebody out there that can help people that are feel like they're alone. But you're not alone. We're all on this.
You know, I got to say too, that you saying that, and really even a lot of the people that we've been talking to, Curtis Duffy and all these, we have talked to like lots of chefs, Danielle, and I feel like it's refreshing to hear somebody that from the outside looking in, maybe an entrepreneur or a chef or somebody working in a, on the line. It to me, it's kind of refreshing to hear somebody like you be honest and say, hey, you know, this is hard. Like people, and I tell that to people too. It's like, look, you know, this has been a brutal year. And I think having that conversation with people and trying to figure out to work together as a solution is what we have to do. And to not talk about it, because it is a very real challenges. Yeah.
I think it's like really important what both of you said, because what you just said, I mean, there's so many people that they're like at home and they probably lost their job and everything, but they think that for them is difficult, but for you, that you have to be like every day standing up, not just for you, for your family, for your team, for the business, for everything, is people don't really realize that, like, I don't know, like you said, probably there's going to be good days and bad days that you're not going to sleep because you have no clue what's going to happen tomorrow. And I think that that's really important for everyone to know, that for everyone that kept working this entire time, because for some people it's kind of like vacation, but some of them is like you, both of you, like three of you, this haven't been like nonstop. I mean, it's just crazy for everyone.
Right. And there's another aspect to it. It's like, and I think I saw an article the other day, and I'm glad an article came out that said it. It's like, these restaurants are closing, but they didn't fail, you know, and that's the truth. It might not work out. And as hard as that is to say and to think about, because we all are such hard workers and we strive for excellence, and the equation might not be there, and it might be completely out of your hands. You know, you could be giving away free steak or something, and there might not be enough people to come and even do that. And it's not necessarily your fault. Now, I know that's not a solution to how you're going to put food on your table, but it could help you mentally understand that this is not a failure. Somebody who doesn't pull through, I mean, I think there's still a lot of restaurants that haven't necessarily announced their closure. I think there's a lot of restaurants now that some cities in Miami just opened up for 50% occupancy inside the dining room. I know other cities, are Los Angeles and things are in the same boat, where they're holding on to just a little bit of cash and whatever's left and whatever funding they might have gotten. And their landlord's been cool because everybody's in the same boat. Well, once they open back up, you got to take that slingshot of what you got left, and you might not make it 30, 60, 90, 120 days. And if people aren't getting on a plane and traveling, I live in a city full of tourism. It might not work, but if we're going to go back to like mental health, it might not be your fault. You know, it isn't your fault, and
right.
don't take it. I mean, this thing's bonkers. You know, this is once in 100 years or longer pandemic. I mean, it's everybody's going through it. You know, so I think mental health is something that should be talked about more.
And yeah, and I feel like there's definitely been more focus on that this year. And you know, maybe there'll be some good things that will come of this. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of a path of destruction that this whole pandemic in the year has left with us. But hopefully there will be some things that kind of come of this. Like you said, even just like having more of a appreciation of like your time and the not trying to figure out ways to not have so much anxiety on everybody. There's a lot of things there. I'll have my last kind of not really a question, but just kind of a thing maybe to look forward to, and I'll let Rachel and Chris if they've got more, because I know we're getting close to an hour. And Brad, thanks again, man. I mean, I know, you know, just in the thick of thin things, making time in your day to be able to do this, we appreciate it. And I wanted to say too that I think it's always good to try to look forward to things. And I know we're all going to have still a lot more, you know, there'll still be some turbulence between now and next year, but it would be great, whether it's up here in Virginia or in Miami, or maybe we meet in Atlanta. It would be great to do like a barbecue dinner together. Would be really pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
But reimagine the barbecue experience would be totally cool. Would love to be able to look forward to do one with you.
But I would love that. I would love to do that. I mean, clearly I'll do barbecue anywhere, and to get the heck out of town and collaborate with you guys, and you know, put a smile on our faces and put a smile on some people's face with our food. I mean, I'm ready, Rich. Let's do it, man.
That would be awesome.
Maybe meet in the middle. I haven't been to Atlanta.
So. We can do that. We
You're
can
welcome
do that.
Here anytime. Yeah.
And Rachel is broadcasting from the bubble. She is actually doing a TV. So I don't want to get you in trouble. I always say too much.
I'm actually in the backseat of my car right now. I'm taking just a quick break. I'm on a set on a movie filming here in Atlanta. So
did you see the Batman thing? I got to interrupt.
No.
Batman shoot is canceled or paused. The main character, I forget his name, is from one of those vampire movies. I think he might have contracted it, but the memes are it's because his mask was on the wrong half of his face.
Oh my gosh.
Because it's on the top.
That is so funny. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah, no, I mean, it has been an absolute pleasure getting to listen to you talk. I mean, you sound brilliant and smart, and anybody who puts Calabrian chilies on their menu, I saw your Brava menu, gets a gold star in my book. I lived in Calabria for a couple months a few years back.
That's cool.
So kudos for that.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure as well.
But if you could give, I guess my last question to you, if you could give any advice to young culinarians who are starting out on their career, on their journey in this industry, and this is, you know, this is kind of a shitstorm to walk into it, to start your career, if you could give them any bit of advice, like what would you tell younger you?
Right. Well, there's no doubt about it, and Rich and Chris can attest to this, that it's a long road. No matter what path you take in this industry, it's going to be a long road. But you can, I think you got to self-teach, and you got to be humble in the manner of not your current sous chef that you might think is the greatest chef or the greatest person, and he might be an awesome mentor and leader. There's only so much that one person can pass to another, and I think you got to teach yourself as much as you can. Reading. I mean, you can't just scroll Instagram all day long and Facebook. You got to spend your time focused. And it's hard to implement that sometimes. You can't just go to work and be like, I'm a first or second year cook and hey, chef, can I go cook some foie gras? Because I read about it.
Still happening, you know, but, there.
Yeah, invest in yourself, whether it be time and if you got a little bit of money too. I used to just go to the store and buy everything. I didn't know what it was. And I remember bringing home like sorghum syrup, and my wife was like, what are you going to do with this? I don't know. And I don't think I ever did anything with it, but I had to open it. I had to put it in my mouth and see what it was. So I'd say invest in yourself.
That's cool. Awesome. That's great. Well,
thank you so much.
I have a couple of more last sure. questions. First is going to be, I know that you're not hiring or anything, but for people out there, if at one point they want to go and work with you, how they can reach out to you. And also if you can mention all of your social media and the name of the pizza so people can still yep. order in, so you're going to get sold out for
that stuff's going to be booked up for a year.
Yeah.
You'll never get any pizza.
No, I hear from my contacts, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, that they are getting bigger, so they're going to try to just reduce that sold out, and everyone is going to be able to get it even better.
We're working on a big new fancy piece of equipment. That
That's amazing. Yeah.
Production. Yeah, we took an Asian cocktail lounge and made it into pieces. Only so far we can go. So that's inside info. First of all, I think I'm always hiring. I'm always hiring for anyone who wants to be here and wants to be a part of what we're doing. I think that's the number one hireable aspect, is if you want to cook here or be a part of this team, we can teach you the rest of it. And I think some of my best guys were well underqualified resume wise, that really came in. I could say that for a lot of operations, because they learn our way how to do it. And so
awesome.
I don't really dig the Instagram DMs, but you know, that's a possibility. But just careers@kilgoreculinary.com, awesome. Or info at, but careers@kilgoreculinary.com. You got to put a resume, even if there's not much on it, but it just shows that you know, respect the process,
right?
And you want to do it a professional manner. And from there, I mean, I'm a pretty approachable guy. If you come into either of the restaurants and you want to say hello and I'm there, I mean, for sure, just ask your server and I'll definitely come over and say hello. It doesn't bother me at all. Actually, I enjoy it. And what was the other half of your question?
The pizza place.
Oh, pizza place. All right, Old Greg Pizza. It goes on sale on Wednesdays online. Usually sells out in anywhere 7 to 10 minutes. And we are going to expand it soon. Like I said, I can't even get my own. It's luck of the draw right now. We also are trying to implement other ways to have like raffles and stuff, so a little bit more fun. Some people get really upset, but I'm like, we sold 500 pizzas today, like on this online. It's not like it's 10, and we're, you know, so. People come. We were going to implement a delivery service, but it sells out. So we're working on it. We hear you guys. Pizza for the people. We're trying. We'll get it. We'll make more soon.
That's great.
Thank you, Chris. Great to see you, man.
Brad, thank you. Thank you very much for your time, and sending you the best wishes for you and your wife, her business, your team members there. That, you know, things get better for everybody this year, and that we got a bright 2021. And I know you inspire a lot of people, and we really appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you.
Yeah,
thanks,
thank
Rich.
Much,
keep
Brad.
It up,
thank
man.
So
I can't
much,
wait
Chef.
To talk with you guys. Have a great one.
You too. All right, Brad. Take
thank
care,
you.
Buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by the ISVA. The International Sous Vide Association provides networking opportunities, educational experiences, another great organization if you love sous vide, both for the professional and the enthusiast. This week we have Comey, which is the ultimate recipe and menu management software. You can find more information about Comey at www.comey.com. That's K-O-H-M-E-E. And it is the software that we use to manage all of our recipes and our menus. And it's an amazing software. Check it out. And also, Frelasso Salmon has a buttery mouthfeel, firm texture, and mild flavor that complements any method of cooking or preparation. We love it. I cook it at home. I cook it on many of our events. Frelasso Salmon is lower in fat than conventional farm salmon. It offers brighter taste. Coming from the cold and beautiful waters of Chile, they have been a leader in sustainable practices for nearly a decade and are truly a trusted source for delicious quality salmon. Check it out.